You know, the world right now is a really unsettled place. And for such a time as this, women play a most important role in history as peacemakers. The goal of Ladies of Liberty Sound Off is to affect the lives of women in an empowering way through discussion of important issues of the day. So, are you ready? The Ladies of Liberty are ready to sound off.
Well, everybody knows Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett is an extremely successful investor. He's legendary. He's the CEO of Berkshire Hathaway. He just had an interview that I thought was really interesting. He talked about how young people can make twice the money they already make. Now, you would think this would be something really complicated and they have to do this and that, but it's so very simple. And what Warren Buffett says is they need to hone their communication skills, both written and verbal. And that's it in a nutshell. And I want to talk about that, Becky and Judy, because I absolutely agree with what Warren Buffett says about our younger generation and how they could make more money. And I also think better relationships if they hone their skills. What do you think?
Oh, this is big. This is really big. I'm so glad that this topic came up. I graduated with a communications degree, which sounds really vague, but when you consider what I do for a living, which is actually speaking and talking, what I went to school for wasn't the intention of what I'm doing now, but communication in my life has become so important. And watching what has been going on over the last couple of decades, but most recently the last decade, and with our 20 and 30 somethings, with the way they communicate with each other, and the fact that that form of communication has become digital, impersonal, not face-to-face, directly relates and reflects on what's happening in society with regard to relationships, both personal and business, the way business functions, all of everything in how our society functions comes down to communications and relationships. And relationships are really important, and that covers all kinds of relationships, but you cannot have a good relationship without good communication. You can't have a good business without good communication, dealing not only with your employees, your suppliers, perhaps your public. The list of how important this is endless. The fact that the younger people appear to not know how to communicate with another individual or groups of people in person is really unnerving. When you think about how do they move forward and how does our society move forward if things are going to become less face-to-face, I have a problem with that. I find it really, really bothersome and disturbing.
So when you look at, any relationship, whether it's personal, whether it's a business relationship, if you cannot communicate, if you cannot clearly explain your position, right? Your feelings, what you want, without dishonoring the other person. Okay. If you don't know how to do that, you will not ever be able to negotiate a deal. You won't be able to they won't be able to do anything. And when I look at, for instance, at my youngest daughter and her struggles relationally at school, I mean, we all grew up having struggles at school with girls. You know, we grew up and there's always going to be that. But not being clear, not having, you say one thing because it's on text or in Snapchat or in Instagram, you type something up and you mean one thing and they're reading something else and then everything blows up. it leads to so many arguments, such a huge breakdown in relationships. And our children are not learning how to communicate clearly their ideas, their feelings. And then when they go out into the workplace, they're astonished that somebody isn't understanding them. And then they feel frustrated. And what happens? Then they blow up, right? It's very, very frustrating. I even just getting my daughter to sit down and write thank you notes for her birthday presents or for her Christmas presents. It is like pulling teeth. Sit down, I sit out the cards, right? And I have to help her write out everything so general, right? It's amazing to me. And they are, that generation is going to run into huge difficulty. Now, when you think that that's where also eventually the next president of the United States is going to come from, right? And not the next one, but eventually our president of the United States will come from that generation. And if he does not, if she does not know how to communicate, not only verbally, verbally and through written communication, what will that do to the world? So the question is, how do we remedy this? Of course, it always goes back to the parents, right? But we're allowing devices to babysit our children. I see toddlers, we go out to restaurants and toddlers are not, to get them to sit there and be quiet so the parents can, have their meal, they give them their phone, right? And the child is playing games, or they have an iPad or they have the computer. It's from the get-go. We use it as a babysitter. And they become dependent on it.
You're exactly right. I see that in restaurants myself, and not just their phone, but a whole little machine that they carry even when the child is really young. And I see it with friends of mine whose grandchildren have those things that are electronic to look at and play with. And those children, they're very, very late in their speech. They're very late in talking because they don't need to. They're just glued to these devices. And I have to say that as an employer, when people come in to interview for jobs, they literally cannot look you in the eye and hold a conversation. They are so addicted to their phones and their electronics, that's the only way that they know how to communicate. And the question that you asked is really a good question. What do we do about it? But the question also for me is, why did we let it get this way? In school, when I was in school, we had to learn cursive writing. We had to learn to write a letter. We had to learn to speak. So we had debates and things like that. I don't think that they do any of that anymore. They're so into their political correctness that they're not teaching our kids communication skills. And they're critical, as you say, for everything that you do for your employment. So what Warren Buffett says, which I absolutely love, he says, if you can't communicate, it's like winking at a girl in the dark. Nothing happens, which is a great picture. It's a great word picture. Nothing happens from that because they cannot communicate. He says, you can have all the intellectual capacity in the world, but you have to be able to transmit it. And transmission is communication. And I absolutely agree. Warren Buffett is one of the richest men in the world. He does not even have a bachelor's degree. He took a Dale Carnegie class. And by the way, I did as well. I was not enamored with it at the time that I took it, but it was a stepping stone in my life to be able to communicate well. I didn't like speaking in front of groups, and that got me past that hurdle. One of the best speakers in front of a group I've ever seen is your husband, Judy. I mean, I don't know how he honed that skill, but he absolutely did. And listen to Becky. Becky makes a living off of speaking well, and she does it so beautifully. It really, really matters. And now we've compounded this issue with our children and with ourselves, with all of these mask mandates, where we can't see people's expression, because communication certainly is words, but it's also facial expressions and physical movements and how you position your body. And all of that is part of communication. And we've cut off a big chunk of that with these masks, which, you know, people can debate if they do anything. I personally don't believe that they do, other than, you know, they are going to be a worse problem for impairing communication and speech for our youngest of children as they grow up. So there's really, what he says is so very simple, but so very powerful.
Wow, that was great. You hit every point. I was going to mention I was going to mention the no more script writing, because it seems like that was the beginning of this slippery slope. And I don't know how many years ago that started, but my husband and I ran into this. We were at the bank and we were working with a young man who had just graduated. This was, I believe it was last May. He had just graduated from a Big Ten university, and he had to sign something, and he printed instead of signed. And my husband looked, and it caught him so off guard, and he was actually kind of writing upside down. I didn't see it, but my husband said, so you decided not to use script writing for whatever it was that he was either signing or writing. And he said, script writing? And Thor said, yes, script, you know, like cursive writing. And he said, oh yeah, I never learned to do that. And I thought, that's the first person that I had met that didn't know how to do that. And his communication skills, in my humble opinion, were pretty weak. He was young. He has what I call, there's something called uptalk. And I just did it right there to make a point. So when people finish their sentence, they go up a lot. And it's kind of the way the 20 and 30 somethings talk. So when they end, it's always like a question. And just, you feel like I should bounce when I hear people talk like that.
Why do they do that, Becky? Why do they do that?
It's a good question. I'm not sure. For me, I feel like it's insecurity.
I agree.
Because if you're ending a sentence with a question, you're not sure of yourself. So when I end it like this, it's almost to say, is that okay? Do you know what I'm saying?
And yeah. You need to put an exclamation point at the end of your sentence.
No, there is a great, you know, with lack of communication, there also comes with lack of being able to communicate well, there's a lack of confidence. And there is a whole generation out there that doesn't feel like they have to communicate well, because they literally have something automated that can do it for them. They can now speak into their phones, and their form of communication is, I want to use a percentage, but I won't be right. I won't be correct. They are, what do I want to say? I'm missing the term that I want here. They are incomplete sentences. They're just fragments of a sentence. Does that make sense? So instead of speaking in a full sentence where you complete ideas, you have a beginning and a middle and an end, a lot of the communication, because of Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, and those genres that have very small spaces for you to write, you're limited to how much how many words you can put in a space. That's the way they communicate now. So their responses and the way they communicate are very abrupt, short, incomplete thoughts, which, like you said, Linda, can very quickly lead to misunderstanding, poor communication, trouble, problems, all kinds of problems.
It is amazing. The whole, back to the whole, that gentleman that Thor was trying to help out.
Yeah. Young man.
He doesn't even have a signature.
I know.
And your signature is, I mean, on every single important document in your whole life, from your marriage certificate, when you get married, to all of your bank statements, to, you know, if you purchase a home, you need your signature. And it's, you know, that is crazy to me. I think about also the whole
now, because you just brought up a really good point about the signature. They're not even teaching cursive in schools. So how are people going to sign now?
How are they going to sign their name? I don't know. Who knows? Maybe we won't be signing anything at all. We'll just have a chip or a barcode.
Oh, no.
But it is, what's interesting to me is when I look at my daughter, they are completely almost paperless at school. Everything she does on her iPad, turns in all of her work on the iPad. So there's absolutely no physical writing anything down, which is, I think that it doesn't help for, so let's talk about, you know, when they're studying, when the kids are studying, I always found that when I read something, well, I hear something, I read something, and then I write it down and then I speak it. That is how I can remember it. Now, there's no writing anything down at all. And I see my daughter struggling, right, to do well on a test. And I say, well, let's write out some note cards. All right, let's create note cards for all of these questions and she really fights me. No, everything is supposed to be done on the iPad. And all they're doing is typing. They're not writing, because writing it down works a different part of your brain.
Yes. And
helps you to remember the facts or the sequence or whatever it is, you know, you're going to be tested on. And I think that they're failing her. I think that the school system is failing her. Now Gabrielle is 6 years older than Emma. And so she just didn't have her whole school on her computer or her iPad. They just had started to have iPads maybe her junior, senior year. And so she was used to writing everything down in her notebook and then creating the note cards to study with. And she took that to school with her. And freshman year, the professor said, this is exactly how I want you to study. And she, because Gabby had all of her note cards out, and she literally stopped the class and said, this right here, because she was taking notes and then writing, creating note cards during the lecture. And Gabby was four-pointing the class, and the prof said, this is, if you want to be successful in this class and in, you know, in any class, this is how you should operate. This is how you should study. And yet our high schools are not promoting that. And they're not promoting cursive. They're not promoting writing at all.
Which doesn't make any sense. It makes no sense at all, because that's a basic for education. It is just the most basic thing is learning to read and write. And writing, just like you said, Judy, has that important element that that clicks with your brain to help with remembering and learning. And it makes no sense why the teachers and instructors in the school systems, elementary, secondary, and higher, why they are not continuing to push that.
That doesn't make sense at all, unless the agenda is to not have a generation that can think for themselves and that can be controlled by the government. I don't know, because it makes no sense to me. How can we fix it is really a good question. Obviously, everybody can only fix what's ever in their little small sphere of influence, which is not much in the big picture. But not having people on electronic devices all the time. I mean, some people are so addicted to their phone that they literally, I have one relative who, when they come over to my house, all through a dinner, all through the entire time that they're there, where everybody's talking and laughing, they are on their phone. They're not talking. I don't know what they're doing, reading, texting, I don't know. But that's not communication. I mean, it's a form of communication, but it's not communication. Getting back to looking at people in the eye and talking, you know, one of the things that I love about my relationship with my husband is that we have the most amazing communication. It's not always fun communication, but it's great communication because we're blatantly honest and we absolutely talk about everything. And it just leaves you a really good feeling, that a very secure feeling. And I think, Becky, you brought up that thing about security and about people's, you know, feelings and insecurities. When you communicate well and you are communicated well with, then you have that sense of security. It doesn't always have to be good news, but you know where you stand and you know what's going on. And the same thing in my business, you know, of course, we're in an email world, and customers now, rather than calling in orders, they email, which is fine. But when something goes wrong, or when something needs to be said, or when a client needs to be reassured, especially in today's world where we have all of these problems with our supply chains and things go wrong every day, I want my people to call and speak to somebody and give them the reassurance that they need and not do it by email. I still want that human touch there to say, hey, we care about your order and we care about, you know, what happens here. And the same thing in personal relationships. Talking about it instead of emailing it or texting it, because you care about what that person thinks and you want a response. And as you both have said so accurately, it's so easy to misinterpret intent in an email or a text because you don't get the other part of communication, the facial expressions, the tone of voice, the body language that comes with it. All of those things need to be there. It's all part of communication. I so agree with what Warren Buffett said, that people could make twice as much money. If you think about somebody, again, I have to go back to your husband, Judy Moran. Your husband is a public speaker. My husband is a public speaker. I don't know about your husband, Becky, if he is or not. But what I know is both of these men are wonderful public speakers and communicators, and people, they drink it in. They long for it. They miss it. And it's a very important skill.
Absolutely.
It really is. I've been thinking about what you said about the younger generation and how they finish their sentences as a question. And I think one of the reasons why they do that is that they, like you said, they, you know, they're insecure about actually making a statement and standing by the statement. And the question is, so why are they afraid to do that? And you look at our culture and how we as a society attack people. We attack them so viciously when we don't agree with what they are saying. So if somebody has a belief and they make a statement about it, and then they're completely canceled, right? When they're kids, they're canceled at school. They're bullied at school. When they grow up, our culture cancels their business. They cancel them. They call them names. They label them. If they've said something that they can't back out of, right? So if you, instead of creating or saying, stating your belief as a statement, and you, instead of doing that and you create a question, it gives you the wiggle room, right? Mm-hmm. To back out of it. And it leads me to the bigger problem is that there are no absolutes any longer. There's not an absolute good. There's not an absolute bad. Everything's just gray now. And in our society, so that we don't hurt anybody. And the truth is that there is truth, right? There is ultimate truth out there. It isn't just my truth, like society is trying to say. There's no right or wrong any longer. I think it's just, which is causing a huge problem, which causes fear. That's what I see.
And I like what Linda repeated, and I'm going to repeat it again, where Warren Buffett says, if you can't communicate, it's like winking at a girl in the dark. And I have that visual now. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just the greatest way to describe what's happening. It's, you might have people talking, but they're not getting messages through, or they're sending the wrong messages by not being able to communicate well and efficiently.
Yeah, isn't some of this about accountability too? Because we're just talking about how people get canceled and how people get, a lot of words are said about them. And everything that you're talking about really is done via what? Instagram, Facebook, text, whatever, TikTok, I don't know, whatever else. Mm-hmm. It's not done face to face. And it's a cowardly way to communicate. And it makes the person that's throwing out all of the badness, that they're kind of invisible, right? So they don't have to be accountable. Where if you are looking somebody in the face and saying those same things, that's a whole different thing. I hate to see this generation go to, just electronic communications. There's so much missed in life with that. I mean, part of the beauty of life is the way that we communicate with each other. That just is really, it's important in every way. It's important to your feeling good or feeling bad. It's important, I mean, even to things like your endorphins and things that make you feel happy and secure. And we're losing that. And I just do think that the schools should go back to things like, the cursive writing, the debate, the things where people have to communicate face to face. But also, I think parents need to really start that with their children when they're young. And I also think personally that we need to get rid of these masks, especially for children in school. I think it's detrimental to their ability to communicate down the road.
Linda, you mentioned the communication through Snapchat and Instagram and Twitter and tweeting, and I don't tweet because I don't Twitter, but all of these venues, I guess, for lack of a better term, that the young people are using to communicate for their social media experiences, what keeps coming back in my mind is that these are places where they communicate with very few words. And it's keeping everything at a very impersonal and not deep conversation about a lot of things. It brings about, maybe rather it teaches you to use fewer words that actually turn out to be less meaningful, in my opinion. Think about, how do young people meet today? They're meeting online. What happens when they get together and they don't have a phone or a computer to talk with each other? I can't imagine their conversations, and, you know, humorously, I imagine their conversations as just being, it's hot today, great looking food, nice shirt, texting, talking, you know, that what I, they don't know how else to communicate. It's like, nice hair, cool jeans, neat shoes. Only they wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't say neat, groovy shoes. I don't know what they'd say.
Let's mute for right now, and we'll be right back.
Don't miss an episode of the Ladies of Liberty Sound Off. Subscribe to the podcast. And for the latest news and inspiration, join us back at AmericaOutloud.com.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races, you toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control label insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support, delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Year upon us, time flies when you're with people you love. Cheers to another year together, my fellow Americans, and thank you for being part of the journey. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of 2022 is upon us. Happy New Year, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back to Ladies of Liberty Sound Off. I'm Judy Moran, and I'm here with my two besties, Linda Martinelli and Becky Kolmainen. They are amazing women. Linda Martinelli is so talented, so crazy talented. She has her another radio show with her husband called Talking While Married. She does Ladies of Liberty Sound Off with us and other fabulous women. She also owns her own business and is extremely successful. She's a mama extraordinaire, and she's an even better grandma. So amazing, amazing, amazing. And my Becky and I go back forever. We raised our babies together, and she is an incredible dog mommy too. And then she has her own business as a, now, what do you call yourself? A talker? I don't know.
A voice talent.
She is a voice talent extraordinaire. And we're here with you today, and so happy to be here. And I was thinking, actually, was it your idea, Linda, to talk about New Year's, or was it mine?
It was mine.
So, you know, we've got the New Year's coming up pretty soon. And it's always, it's interesting to me because our whole mission as a family is to change a million lives through the 12-week year. And Just the concept of the 12-week year negates New Year's resolutions, okay? And I'm not a really big fan personally of New Year's resolutions because, you know, it sounds really great. I do love January. January typically is one of my most favorite months. And the reason being is that it always seems calmer to me. You know, you're coming off the hustle and bustle of the holidays and it just seems calmer and you have this illusion of time. I think the illusion that you have the full next year to accomplish and do whatever it is you want to do. And to me, that's an illusion because 92%, okay, of people who create New Year's resolutions fail, by the way, within the first month of that New Year's resolution, 92%. So in essence, why are we going to create something that we know we're going to fail at, right? That doesn't feel good at all. Over 130 million Americans will set New Year's resolutions this year. And by the way, that same statistic holds true for goal setting in general. So, you know, the end of the year, everybody thinks it's a great time to take stock and determine the areas that we would like to improve. So January rolls around and millions make commitments to lose weight, be a better spouse or parent, to quit smoking, to get a new job, to stick to the budget. Well, I've done that before. That lasts until I hit Home Goods. And then but the list goes on. And then there's February. February comes around and we didn't do what we said was important. And then we just feel bad about ourselves. So I don't know if it's a positive thing. I know, Becky, you were saying that you had some thoughts on this fun subject. Tell me.
I do. You know, I am not a fan of New Year's resolutions. And in the past, I have made them like many people. And I confess to having a treadmill or two that has become a great closet place to hang my clothes instead of actually running on the treadmill. Those New Year's resolutions of, like you said, Judy, gonna lose weight. I'm gonna eat better. I'm going to learn to play a new instrument. I'm gonna do all these things that the day before you had no interest in or you didn't think about, you're not gonna do. Suddenly you have something new. You have a clean slate. You can make a clean slate any day of the year mm-hmm. and stick to it with less pressure if it's important to you. But the thing that keeps coming back to me is over this past year, there have been a number of things that I will confess that have fretted about. Worry might be too strong of a word, but concerns and, you know, there's health, there's money matters. There are always money matters. And when you live like that, it tends to wreak havoc on your physical body and your mental well-being and your spiritual well-being. And I don't want to live like that anymore. So during these past 12 months, at some point, I made a choice to say, I'm going to live in the moment and I'm not going to project into the future. I'm not going to worry about the future and I'm not going to spend my time looking in the rearview mirror, even at mistakes that I made so that I can learn from them. I hopefully have learned from them and I don't need to keep looking back. But when I spend my time thinking forward with, okay, this is coming 3 months from now and I need to prepare for this. What am I going to do? This probably isn't going to be good. Everything tends to turn negative when I project. Don't know if that's just my personality, but I think things have a tendency to go that way when you project. Mm-hmm. Because you don't know the future. You can't know what's happening. And I've lived enough years to know we don't know. We don't know what's coming around the corner. And I am so eternally grateful. I don't know what is coming in the next minute, hour, year, or for the rest of my life. I don't want to know. God's already taken care of that. So I don't have to worry about it anymore. And if I keep in the moment and live in the moment, then I can breathe. I can breathe easier. I can relax a little more, and I can handle whatever is going to come that next minute better than emotionally carrying around suitcases full of fretting and concern, which I used to do. And it's very freeing to live in the moment. Now, that's not to say that I don't occasionally look back or try to get the telescope out to look ahead. But when I do, I stop myself. And making New Year's resolutions for me would just be a major projection. And I know myself well enough to know I'm not going to stick to an exercise plan that I think today I've got all figured out, and by June, I will have a bikini body. That ain't going to happen. That's not going to happen. No. So I think New Year's resolutions are a setup to fail for the most part. And I think it's probably healthier to live in the moment personally.
Well, I agree with you totally. I'm not big on New Year's resolutions, and I made them for years and I never kept them ever. But with this whole COVID situation, which changed everybody's lives in so many different ways, I think that I really, well, I've always lived in the moment. So I'm very comfortable with living in the moment, and I'm very flexible, and I can do things spontaneously, and I love that. But also what it did is it told me that I can just make my resolution, not even a resolution, just make a decision at some point. So at some point last year, I decided that I was going to lose weight. And I wanted my husband to join me in that journey, and he wasn't ready. And I respect that. Everybody has to be ready at their own time. So I said, okay, well, here's what I'm doing. So I started on my own to do what I wanted to do to make myself better. And a few weeks after that, he was like, wow, what are you doing? It's really working. So he joined me, and we both have been more than successful with our journey. And the reason is because we're not putting these time frames on us. Like, by this time, I have to lose these many pounds. None of that is happening. So during our journey, we've traveled to Italy, and we ate anything that we wanted there. And we've traveled to other places, and we just have decided to eat what we want, but within reason. And it's just been hugely successful. It's been the first time in my life that I have not gained weight back by going on vacation, and just continued on this journey because it's been day by day rather than some big goal set for a date certain. And I love that. And I love living in the present, which I think everybody could use that advice. Becky, that's great advice, because if you don't live in the present, you miss it. If you live in the past and you dredge up all this garbage, you miss the present. If you live in the future about what you're going to do, you miss the present that way too. And the present is where you are, and you only get that present of the present every day, one time. So yeah, I think having some sort of idea of where you want to go in life is perfect, and we all need to do that. But living in the moment and making those moments the best, I mean, if I was going to say what my New Year's goal is, that would be my New Year's goal, is just to not have a New Year's goal and make it be living my best moment every moment of every day. And what more can you hope for from life than that?
If you try to create a strategic plan for your company and your business, if you're looking on annualized thinking or New Year's resolutions, it's just everything changes too fast. And I think the other reason why New Year's resolutions or quote unquote goals fail is I think that people don't count the costs. A New Year's resolution or a goal is a commitment, and commitments require sacrifice. So I think that too often we fail to fully consider the costs before committing. I think one thing your husband did do, Linda, when you wanted him to join you on your journey, on your weight loss journey, and it's not even your weight loss journey, it was more than that. You've changed your life to live a healthy lifestyle. But he was counting the costs. He wasn't so sure he wanted to make the sacrifices. He wasn't ready. And he became ready after he saw how healthy you became and what a difference it made in your life. At that point, he was willing to make the sacrifices. But I think often people can come up with a laundry list of things that they could do, but that just leads to diffusion and discouragement. In most cases, there are a few core activities, I think, that you could do to achieve your goals. But it's extremely helpful when you're in the middle of one of the costs, one of the sacrifices, to recognize that you anticipated this and decided it was well worth it. And to really keep in mind the reason why, your why. Why am I doing this? Why do I want that? Why do I want to be healthy? Why do I want that job? You know, what is it going to do to my life when I achieve it? And really, so that when you face that valley of despair, when you're faced with the sacrifice you're supposed to be making to gain the goal, right? That you remember why you're doing it. So I think it's important to count the costs before you engage, for sure. And the other piece of it is, if you do create a goal and there is something that you want to achieve, I think it's really important to engage in peer support, having a support system, so that it's not just your personal goal and I want to do this. You really have to gather everybody in your atmosphere and get their buy-in to support you. Because Linda, if you and I are going out for martinis and appetizers and all of that, right? right. I need to support you. You need to be clear with me that this is your goal and these are the sacrifices that you're going to make, right? And one of them might be that we're not going to get dessert when we go out, right? Boo-hoo, right? But it's having that support system and also having somebody that champions you and champions your decision to do what you said was important. Yep.
Those are beautifully and well said, Judy. Truly. I just think I love everything that you said. And I go back to the freedoms that are there when we don't make resolutions.
Right.
It is clearly, with the flipping of the calendar date, it's a clean slate. The year starts over. We're starting with number one. We have 12 of them. So it's logical that that's a good time to start a new trend or whatever it is that you might want to correct or add or subtract from your life. I think it's a good opportunity to do those things. I think if we can, like you mentioned, look at those things less as, okay, I have 12 months to reach these goals, but the day to day, I'm tackling this today. And today I did great. I didn't eat any cookies or pie or brownies. I did have some Muddy Buddy Chex Mix stuff though. But so I kept it under control today. And how we tackle what might be considered to be a resolution. doesn't have to be that long-term goal, which sets you up for failure. So I still plan on not having any New Year resolutions, but enjoying the freedom that comes with a clean slate of a new year.
And I think that that sounds perfect. And I think everybody can live with that, because New Year's goals, when you fail, what do you feel like? You feel like a failure. I failed. But every single day we can make our own success. And, you know, I'm at my office in California as we're speaking, rather than at home in Texas. And oh my gosh, there's tons of things around here, like See's Candy and just wonderful things. I don't walk by it. If I really want a piece, I'm going to go have that piece. And I can make a little sacrifice later in the day or not. And that's my choice every day. But I don't feel like a failure. And feeling like a failure is a really bad feeling. And it sets you up for, I don't know, really more failure, I think. So I don't know, people need to, I think, chill out a little bit about New Year's. And certainly in life, we should always have goals and we should always set ourselves up to do what's best for us. But it shouldn't be just a once a year kind of thing. I mean, you know, it makes me think of gyms, right? Gyms get most of their memberships for the whole year in January. And most people within 3 months are gone and they've paid for a whole year of gym membership. So, you know, I don't know. It's just those things haven't worked well for me. And although I do belong to a gym, I didn't join it in January because I've stopped doing the New Year's resolution thing. And I want to do things when it's right for me to do them and when I understand the consequences of doing them. And it could be in business. It's the same thing where you set your budgets or you set your priorities. I'm a little different about that. I don't do it the same way. I get up every day of my life and I do the best I can do for that day in everything I do. And whether it's in business or whether it's in my marriage or whether it's with my kids, I do the best I can do. And you know what? That's all I can do. That's all I can do. So I'm every day, I'm happy with that. Everything doesn't always turn out the way that I think it's going to turn out or hope it's going to turn out, because obviously we all have outside influences. But I think a life plan is great. And I would just suggest to anybody, Judy Moran on this show, her husband wrote a book called The 12-Week Year. One of the best books I've ever read. It makes you rethink your goals and how to achieve them. And it's just so worth reading. And I'm sure you can get it on Amazon or any of the places where you get books. It just really is a great way, if you really want to set goals, to rethink how to do that. The new word, reimagine. And that's, you know, that really helped me make some changes in my life that made goal setting so much easier and just so much less stressful.
Linda, I just really want to thank you so much for sharing that and saying all of your kind words about Brian and your kind words about the 12-week year in the book. What I appreciate you so much. And you know what? We really do as a family want to make a difference in a million lives or more. We want to help people be and do and have what's important to them in their lives. And so what I would like to do is give a free book to anyone who wants to read the 12-week year. If you're serious and you know, there are things and that you want to accomplish in your life, from, you know, making millions of dollars to losing weight, to having a really great marriage or great relationship with your family, whatever it is, I would like to give a book to anyone who wants one. It's called The 12-Week Year by Brian Moran and Michael Lennington. And if they go to www.12weekyear.com, they can click on free book. I want a free book. And we'll send it out to them. How's that?
Liberty in there. And I think from all the ladies, but I'm going to let you both say the words that you want to say. I would like to wish everybody a happy, healthy, wonderful 2022 and look forward to your very best year.
I agree.
Happy New Year. Make it wonderful, make it healthy, and the best that you can.
Mm-hmm. I pray that everybody is blessed this next year and that it's truly better than you even expect. That 2022 is outrageously, wonderfully fabulous for you.
Well, ladies, that's a wrap. One more step for womankind.